Meow. So where's that mare keeping his stash? I think I'll just...
It's that bitch Catwoman.
Ow!
You're gonna need all of your 9 lives, bitch.
Holy sexism!
Just a moment, citizen.
Batman!
Don't forget me!
Quite right, Robin. Now, you men should realize that sexist language is wrong, shouldn't you?
Yes, Batman.
You guys wouldn't like it if they called your aunt that, now would you?
Well said, Robin. I hope we've given you something to think about.
You certainly have.
Good boys. Come, Robin. Somewhere, there is a crime in progress. Good day, Catwoman.
So what? You're just gonna leave me here? Huh?
At least we won't call you sexist language, you fuck.
I think maybe sitting in the back of the class with Anne is a bad idea. No, she's just so pretty. I get distracted, I guess.
Do you?
Wish I could draw her nose.
This is the Sarcastic Voyage Podcast. Episode 127 featuring Ron Algar Watt and Matt Robotham. With the Sarcastic Voyage comedy-style players, and a special appearance by Mallory Duvall.
Yes, hi, hello. This is apparently the last show we will be doing for 2011 that isn't Clusterflump-related, so...
Yeah. Enjoy it while you can.
Yes, those of you measuring meaningless milestones, here's one for you right now.
Awesome, I'm writing it down.
Well, I figured it would be you.
Last one before thing.
Except Clusterflunk, and then, of course, we'll do bonus stuff, and then we'll be back again in a couple of weeks, and yeah.
It's Note me. To self, include foil cover.
Yeah, of course. And don't get Joe mad to draw it, because there's video games out. I hear that's happening again.
Yeah.
This, for those of you who don't know, and I barely know because on account of not knowing anything about comics, there's a infamous comic book artist who just wandered away from what he was working on in the 90s because of video games. And
yep. He got addicted to Final Fantasy VIII, which isn't even a good Final Fantasy game.
I don't know, man. Those are those games where you walk around guys in a circle and beat them with sticks, right?
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah, and there's several of them, and they keep remaking the same ones.
That's right.
Yeah, I don't get it.
They keep remaking the same one that nobody likes because they want you to start liking it.
Oh, well. So they're doing what George Lucas does and gets yelled at, only people like this.
Yeah, except that I don't like this.
Yeah, but people seem to.
Well, people are dumb.
Well, people are dumb, which actually brings me to one of the things I wanted to discuss. Did you know? I mean, you do know because I just told you. But did you, the audience, know? There is a special Wikipedia for stupid people.
I love this. This delights me.
I was not looking for this. I was looking up something on Wikipedia, as I want to do, as I often do, because I just that's become my life. Every time I don't know something, I go look it up. And, you know, you can make all the jokes you want about it being inaccurate or whatever. It's actually not that inaccurate. It's policed by internet nerds, and you know how those people are. So I actually more or less, like, I'd like to go verify it if it seems questionable, but for the most part, I tend to believe what I read there. In any case, I went to look something up, and I said, wait a minute, okay, here's the languages they have. They get French and German and so forth. They have Esperanto, which I actually wanted to discuss also in a moment, but that's a separate thing. And then they have what's called Simple English, which I will link to in the show notes, but, I mean, you can just look at it. It's right there on the front page. There's a Simple English version of Wikipedia. And what this does, apparently, is dumbs it down to under 3 syllables.
Hitler was a mean man. He did bad things.
Yeah.
Citation needed.
It's just, and you know, someone brought up that, okay, this could actually be for learning disabled people. It could be for children or whatever. You know, I'm sure people with genuine learning disabilities probably have their own resources, and if this exists for them, that's fine, but I don't think that's what this is for.
No.
I think it's for dumb people, and I don't feel bad besmirching the good name of dumb people, because they don't have a good name. They're dumb people.
Yeah, dumb people don't listen to this show.
No, I'm pretty sure they do, Matt. This isn't the mail segment, but we'll prove that soon enough. I kid, of course, except for Deke. No, I kid, of course. No, it's just...
Except for Deke.
Except for Deke. Deke is still continuing to leave one comment on each episode in hopes that he'll get some kind of a forum started, and he's still pretty much the only one. So that may be why I call him dumb. Like,
I'm sorry, but, like, you're not going to get any achievements for doing this.
No, these aren't Riddler bowling trophies. We don't give special awards for posting on every... You know, I'm glad you do. I'm glad you listen. Although a lot of the comments seem to be based entirely on, like, the cover art or one of the show notes. Like, it's pretty clear you just went to the site and posted a comment on what you saw.
Yeah.
Not actually what you heard, but, you know. We're well beyond people having to listening to the show. Like, you don't have to listen anymore.
No one's ever gotten to the end of their life, looked back at it, and said to themselves, I wish I'd spent more time commenting on a podcast.
Yes, exactly. So, speaking of achievements, though, of prizes, because this is sort of our last show of the year, kind of, in an asterisk, sort of, I don't know. I feel like one of those sports fans who are like, well, my team has only ever won in indoor games, which are odd-numbered against this team when we're wearing our dark uniforms and the sun is not out. Shut up, kid.
That sounds like a lot to go through just to win.
But, you know, that's
you should probably just get a better team. Take the guys that aren't good, that aren't winning all the time, and get better guys.
Yeah, they should put us in charge of sports because it's really...
I don't understand why this is hard.
No, I don't understand why coaching is so difficult when you just use the good players and get rid of the bad ones.
Yeah, just take all the good guys and put them on one team, right, and then we can all cheer for that team.
Hang on. Matt, did you just JLA a sports team?
Yes, I'm going to solve this shit right now.
Okay.
Because it's going to save everyone a lot of time, especially me, who's sick of having shows he likes interrupted by sports games. Just take all the guys, put them in one place, let them win. Easy.
But if they all win, then it's meaningless. You have to let the best ones win.
Damn it.
See, I know, it's complicated. In any case, from a certain point of view, this is our last show.
From a certain point of view.
Yes, exactly. Which is to say that Darth Vader is not Luke's father, except that he is. No, we have some business we should take care of, because we will sort of be putting our heads down and working on the Clusterflog, but also, some things that we have planned for early next year. We're using the sort of lighter workload time to do more work, because that's how we roll.
Because we don't function any other way.
Yeah. Well, I don't, and you do what I say. So.
Well, yes.
That's how that goes. But this is also a reminder, if you want to participate in Clusterflunk, please do. Send us an email at podcast@algar.com or contact us, like, on Twitter or something, and just let us know, because we'd love to hear from you. And so far we've heard from a fair amount of people, but they're all people we expected to hear from. I really was hoping to get one or two people that I know listen to the show that don't usually participate. You don't have to be in our little circle of friends or whatever. Like,
yeah.
That circle of friends is not even entirely a circle of friends. Not all those people know each other or like each other. Like, don't think that it's some clique that you're not a part of, because most of the people that became part of it, if it even is a thing, they just kind of showed up and started talking. Like,
yeah,
don't feel left out. Like, this is your chance to participate, and please do.
We've got more listeners than ever before, and we want to hear from you guys.
Yes, exactly. We like to talk to you guys, and
yes.
This year we'd like to foist your questions on each other. Mm-hmm. So check that out if you could. But yeah, I wanted to settle a couple of the outstanding business, just a couple of final things before we press forward into new things. And one of those is, we did have a contest. We used to run our contests a little more formally, we used to check back in every now and then, and this was just kind of lingering out there for a while, but I didn't forget about it, which is our contest to wear the logo of either this show or Post-Atomic Horror with a famous person or in front of a cool-looking thing or in a cool location or something like that.
Yep.
And I think we got a few good entries there on the website, which we will link to again. It's good stuff. Had a lot of good showings there. I was particularly fond of Ted Bigsby had one taken in front of Chris Hardwick, the Nerdist guy.
Oh, yeah, that was goddamn cool.
Who I'm a big fan of. Pat McDonald had his picture taken in front of a big frying pan, I think.
In front of the internet's own frying pan.
I think that's what that is. For the world's largest horrible wife to brandish, I assume. It's right next to the giant rolling pin.
It was going to show up in Ghostbusters 2.
Right.
Brandished by the Statue of Liberty.
Of course. The Statue of Liberty, the horrible wife of some other...
America.
Yes. Bring me your tired and your poor. You never take me out.
Why don't we go to the opera?
Ugh, God, horrible wives.
And, my entire idea of horrible wives is based off of Home Improvement.
I never saw Home Improvement, but
it had the most horrible of horrible wives.
As with most things, even though I'm not really a fan of this particular show, the quintessential everything starts with the Flintstones, and the number one, the proto horrible wife, if you were, is Wilma Flintstone. She never let Fred have any fun, and she was always, like, nagging him to do crap that was stupid and terrible, and her mother was even worse.
And she rang up his credit card bill.
Yes, and she had a little song to do that because she thought it was great, and she didn't do a damn thing. I mean, that kid wasn't even born until, like, season 8.
Nope.
And, you know, they live in a cave. You don't have to keep it that clean.
What do you do all day, exactly?
Man. I mean, it's a living. No, the animals do. The animals do that. You don't even get that line.
If you have like a house that's based all around animals doing things, then it's a pretty closed circuit, you know?
Plus, it's a cave, again.
Yeah.
Like, who's going to notice if it's filthy? It's a cave.
What are we, living in a fucking castle? No, that's the medieval Flintstones. And, a show which I'm sure Hanna-Barbera at least considered.
Well, they did a Roman-era Flintstones called The Roman Holidays.
You're kidding, right?
No, I'm not. That's an actual show, The Roman Holidays.
Oh, I quit forever.
And I don't know what sitcom it was ripped off of, but I'm sure they didn't come up with original characters.
Well, come on. This is Hanna-Barbera we're talking about.
Yes. We are often talking about
the original idea they ever had was make it a yak.
Well, see, the thing is, I still believe that the Flintstones, in a weird way in my head, and I've said this on the show many times. I think I even did a little monologue to this effect. But the Flintstones is sort of the proto, like they are... They really did exist in the prehistoric days, as far as I'm concerned, because everything sort of comes from that. They're sort of like if you read your Joseph Campbell, you know, the myths, the archetypes. I think the Flintstones is all of that for horrible sitcoms. And I think
Fred Flintstone and the Hero's Journey.
Yes, exactly. And really, you know, I mean, George Lucas says the Star Wars was based on the Hidden Fortress, but really.
No.
I mean, Luke's weird little, you know, dress thing is basically Barney Rubble's, you know, pullover.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, like, why else do you guys think the Sarlacc turns the camera and goes, it's a living after it eats Boba Fett?
Yeah, exactly. And really, I mean, in the original cut, before they kind of put that snappy monster in there, it looked more like a quarry to me.
Yep.
I mean, there's, you know, and Dewbacks, come on.
I see a stormtrooper sliding down a Dewback tail.
Yabba dabba doo.
Clone 748. Meet clone 748.
See, the thing is, I think you could do this with anything. I think you could tie anything back to the Flintstones. Like I said, I've said this before. This isn't new material for me. But because of that, Wilma is the original horrible wife. And so, yeah, Pat had a picture in front of the giant frying pan.
That's what we were talking about.
Yes. Now, I do enjoy our tangents now. I always have to put a bookmark where we were so we can come back there. If it's not for 20 minutes, that's fine, but I have to remember. And most recently, we got a great picture. We got this a few weeks ago, and I actually just forgot to put it up. It's a picture of Flonk and Chris Page, both of whom have been on the show, involved with the show in various capacities, good friends of ours. Mm-hmm. One of them's wearing a Sarcastic Void shirt. One of them's wearing a Post-Atomic Horror shirt at New York Comic Con.
Nice.
And it was a nice picture seeing the two of them together in a location with lots of people, one wearing each, you know, logo. Like it was a nice bit of heraldry on their part. So.
Oh, totally.
I think we had decided that Chris Page is officially the herald of this show, like our Silver Surfer.
I think that's fine.
Yeah, as long as he doesn't get naked on a surfboard, I think we're good.
I disagree. I think that's exactly what needs to happen.
All right.
And if anyone in the audience is willing to paint him silver, please write us a letter.
We'll even spring for the silver paint. How about that?
Indeed we will.
The thing is, we're sharing, we're not sharing a table, but we're sharing, like, he has the table right next to us at Emerald City. So if we did that, that would be the place to do it. Yeah, if you want to draw someone to your area, and I say area, you really want to get naked and paint yourself, slather yourself in silver paint.
Hey, those guys have a silver dude. Let's go see what they're doing.
Could be anything. And we got some fun surprises planned. I am terrified.
I don't hear nearly enough of.
I actually had to edit a bit out there because Matt tipped one of the many secrets that I'm terrified someone's going to steal from us, which when you see what it is, you're going to say, what, really? You thought someone was going to steal that, huh? But look, listen, I don't think anyone else is going to have one of these. And now I'm wondering if we should even mention the silver guy, because someone might steal that too.
We run a podcast like Willy Wonka runs this factory. Just close the place down. Nope.
Yep.
Too many other podcasters are sending in spies.
That's not Slugworth. He works for us.
Fucking Slugworth podcast. I'm so sick of that show. So little girl, you wish to listen to a podcast.
I don't think he's German, is he?
He was totally German.
Was he? I don't know. It's been a while. I'm not going to...
Ah, Charlie Bucket. How would you like more of these? I'm German.
Did he say that? Did he actually say, I'm German?
That's right.
All right.
Like all German celebrities. Like all German... Slugworth was the greatest.
Yeah, well, the greatest trick the German people ever pulled after that Hitler thing.
Was stealing the secret of the everlasting Gobstopper.
Yes. Hitler would have marched on the earth for 1,000 years if he'd gotten the secret of the everlasting Gobstopper.
I don't have to pay you people. I can just give you candy that works forever.
I just imagine that's the lost Indiana Jones adventure. Indiana Jones and the Factory of Wonka.
Don't stare directly into the camera.
If Hitler gets the secret of the Gobstopper, we're all doomed.
He's trying to breed a blonde-haired, blue-eyed Oompa Loompa.
should have sent my diary to Mike TV. All right, but my point is, we had this contest. Oh, my other point, my other sub-point. See, I went out back inside the brackets, but I forgot to go back inside the parentheses inside the brackets. Chris Page is probably going to say, no, I don't want to be slathered in silver paint. You know what? If we get enough people to demand it, I don't think his opinion even matters. So.
Nope.
So, Chris, this may end up happening whether you want it or not.
Needs of the many outweigh the needs of the person who doesn't want to be slathered in silver paint.
The needs of the many... the needs of me pretty much outweigh everything is how I look at it. Although he does...
Especially if you provide the silver paint.
Although, you know, he does have the table next to us, and he does have a pretty good whacking stick that he carries around with him. So maybe we should
forgot about that stick.
Yeah, he's got that whacking. Listen, when you're Chris Page, every day is whacking day. Okay, now back outside the brackets to the original point, which was the contest. We got a lot of good entries, but the main, the one that I think Matt and I completely unconditionally agree on is Shauna Ziyoko, who presented a picture of herself wearing a Sarcastic Voyage shirt, sitting next to the lovely and talented Felicia Day.
Absolutely.
Now, I in particular am not a huge fan. Like, I'm not a fan. Mm-hmm. I'm just not super. Like, I like the Guild okay, and yeah, Dr. Horrible was good. But I'm not a slathering fanboy for her. However, mm-hmm. this man on the other microphone, in I believe the left channel,
indeed,
is in fact a slathering fanboy. So. So that vote definitely weighed heavily in this decision.
Yeah. That was really, when that one came in, it was really the one to beat.
Yeah. And but even putting that aside, as celebrity status goes, Nerdist guy was close. Ted, you did good. But now Felicia Day, a little bit more famous.
Yep. She's been on Buffy.
Yeah, but Nerdist guy had a show on MTV for a while. He's got a show on BBC America now. Like, he's, you know, he's got stuff going on.
Well, I know, but he hasn't been on Buffy. I've seen that show.
Well, very well. So, Shauna, you will be receiving a prize pack of, I don't know, probably a bunch of stickers. And most importantly, this damn Smurf that's been looking at me since July. So Panicky Smurf will soon be yours. Thank God.
You can start looking for someone to foist him off on now.
Yeah, see, Shauna is currently, I know, working on a degree in, was it theology? I was like, what? God, no, it's like the scholarly, theology, that's the one. It's not godology, it's not, religionomy. Yeah.
Jesusology.
The thing is, you know, she's actually studying the actual, like, religious texts and so forth. I'm worried that this Smurf may drive her from that, may make her realize there is no God. But on the other hand, it gets the Smurf out of my house, so...
See, I disagree. I believe that it's the sign of Satan's hand.
Well, that's also true. The important thing is it gets it out of my house, though.
That is the big one, yes.
And beyond that, I don't really care. And she earned that prize. Like, it's not like I'm just sneaking. It's not like I'm foisting it, you know, like, sneakily. I said the prize will be a prize plus this thing.
Mm-hmm.
She entered knowing that. And so now she must take receipt of this thing. And you can't throw it away. The only way to get rid of it is to legitimately gift it upon someone else.
Yep.
That's how you got to do it. I got it in a box of Tidro soap. Now it's your problem.
Godspeed, Shauna Zioko.
Sarcastic voyage. Now it's your problem. So I think that's about all the old business we have. We would like you to participate in Clusterflunk. Contest is over. Mm-hmm. We're still taking donations. We're trying not to hammer on that too hard. We'll probably come back to that in early March when the convention approaches.
Yes.
We did meet about 50% of the total goal, which is far more than we ever expected. So thank you again for that.
You guys are awesome.
The incentives for those donations are slowly starting to happen. That is what we're using the upcoming downtime for.
Yep.
We're just about finished with our first published project, which will be a comprehensive unofficial episode guide of the Star Trek original series.
Yep.
Under the Post-Atomic Horror brand. It'll just be me and Matt and a couple of the regular guests chipping in a little bit, but mostly me and Matt. Encapsulating the entire original series, the animated series, and all the movies. Basically everything that had Kirk and Spock in it that's official will be covered in this thing. Mm-hmm. For those of you who donated, you will get, to that level, you will get a copy. For those of you who didn't, it will be sold in our store. I haven't placed a price yet. It's going to be under $5. I don't know how much yet, but $5 or less. You can just buy it separately if you'd like to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be at our table at Emerald City. We have more projects coming after that. This is just the one that's going to be finished soon, so I'm comfortable announcing that now. We have another published project that'll be more affiliated with this show, that more details will come later for that.
Mm-hmm.
We have a best of CD, which is basically just a giveaway. It's stuff that we've already given you free, so we're not gonna, we're not gonna charge you for that, of course.
Yeah.
I may charge postage if you really want one. Or just give you a place to download it, actually. Why would we waste a CD on that? That's foolish.
Yeah.
And then we're going to do an original CD of new material, which we might charge a couple of bucks for. So look forward to all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty exciting time for us. Fun, sexy
time.
Yep,
we're very busy here at Sarcastic Voyage Central.
Yep. And, we don't have a Smurf anymore. So there's that. That's all I can think about, really. You know,
it's all sort of coming together now.
Yeah, I mean, once I get rid of that Smurf, everything was... uphill from there, or downhill, whatever the good one is.
It's like getting rid of a gypsy curse.
Or a gypsy. Finally got the gypsy out of my house.
Fucking, don't you have a place to be?
No, we wander. We're nomads. That's what we do. Damn it.
Every one of us is a fiddler on the roof.
Or a Dracula. Or both.
Bleh.
Bleh! All right, and with that, we're going to take a break and play some bits for you, so... enjoy that.
Hi, can I help you find something?
Well, yes. I'm looking for one of those bears in a sports jersey.
We have a number of those. Do you know for which team?
I'm not entirely sure. I don't know much about sports teams. I'm looking for a present for a friend. She isn't from our area, but I was thinking I should send her one from here.
Oh, this lovable fellow. Hang on, just pass the stuffed animals here.
Oh, that's a big one.
Keep moving, lady.
There we go. This might be who you're looking for, then.
Does it really matter? I mean, they're all the same bears in little shirts.
Well, some people might be offended if you send them the wrong bear.
I guess I just don't know that much about it. So, is there a string pull or something to open him up? Or is doing it manually supposed to be part of the fun?
Yeah, string pull?
You know, how do I behead and dismember him?
What?
Well, my friend isn't from here, so obviously she wouldn't want to support our bears. What better way to show her revulsion for our team than to display a decapitated stuffed animal?
By hissing at the TV?
Certainly not. That hardly captures the visceral sense of hatred and elation that she's described to me while watching the game. Opening the box should mirror that experience, so it's blood-colored cotton and ripped-out seams or nothing.
Well,
So, if he doesn't come with a string pull, do you have any vivisection scissors I could buy? You'd think they'd come in a set. People just have no marketing sense.
Actually, ma'am, we have some local sports team brand vivisection scissors right here.
Now you're talking! Wait, why do they cost more?
Well, they're the only vivisection scissors to be officially endorsed by our sports team.
Oh.
Now, you're going to want a special pen to X out its eyes.
To show that it's dead.
Exactly. Otherwise, how would you know? And you have to use this special pen, which is a little pricier, but...
But you can't put a price on visceral, symbolic, sports, mascot-related injury.
Surgery, ma'am. This is precision work. Surgery. And now, for the final touch of realism, you're going to want something organic for its guts. Something like,
This ground beef?
Nah, that's not bad, but your best bet is this prime veal cutlet.
Well, money's no object, I guess. Wait, the warning label says may attract bears. Is that a sports thing?
No, that's a legitimate bear warning, but I wouldn't worry about it. We hardly get any bears down at this end of the mall.
But isn't that a bear the...
Wait, that's not how the sketch ended.
Yeah, I know. We didn't have an ending, so I tacked on a bear mauling.
Why do all your sketches end with bear maulings?
I don't know. I think they're funny. And they're an easy way out of a sketch with no ending. Oh, God!
Oh, Jesus! Oh, God! It's in my intestines.
And we're back. We actually did one of our little guest summonings. I wanted to play the whole sound effect and everything, but she's already here, so kind of spoiled that. But Matt brought his girlfriend. Mal's here. So hi, Mal.
Hello, gentlemen. What's up?
This actually was my request. I need to ask you something. This was something that came up on Twitter, and I find this very odd.
Okay.
And not in a judgmental way, because, you know, for all our joking, I don't judge. People do what they do. But you commented on something tasting like ants.
Yeah, my tomatoes tasted like ants the other day. It was gross.
And so this started me digging. And boy, did I end up somewhere weird. So, the obvious question is, how do you know what ants taste like? To which you said.
I believe my response was, what, you've never poured yourself a bowl of peanut butter Captain Crunch, poured the milk in, taken a bite, and realized it was covered in ants?
Which, as I said, was the greatest sentence I've ever heard. Problem, Matt?
Yeah.
I've kissed that mouth.
Yeah, you have.
Have you ended up with any ants?
It's an ongoing concern.
I don't know, but now I'm starting to wonder.
So now
I can't look at her without like seeing a mouth brimming with ants. So thanks for that.
That's a Lovecraftian horror, just ants spewing out of my mouth.
The thing is,
yes.
So this happens to you a fair amount. This isn't just a one-time occurrence.
No, it's happened a couple of times to me. Yeah.
Oh.
There was a...
And see, I know you. We've shared a car. We've shared we've been in the same room for a long period of time. You are not what I would call an unhygienic person. You don't appear to be covered in honey.
No.
You don't appear... I mean,
recently.
I haven't been to you... No, and I haven't been to your home, but I don't think it's wedged between two pieces of glass.
Matt has been to my home. He can test, you know,
Is it wedged between two pieces of glass? Is it on a large scale?
No, there's only one piece of glass.
Which is a window, right? Like a normal human window?
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
And there's not like an elaborate series of tunnels, two-dimensional tunnels that...
No, I mean, not the last time I was there. It's very possible that they could have renovated.
Okay, but I assume this is an ongoing thing. She mentioned that this came up during an episode of the now-defunct Chuck vs. Mal podcast. So this has been going on since before you guys dated. So I don't think, you know.
The problem has followed me from house to house. It's not an isolated incident.
So it's you.
It's me. It's fully me.
So mentioned, like, ants just have something against you?
I don't even know if it's against. They seem to be attracted to it. Like, she's eating them, but...
It's not intentional eating.
No. But you're the one obviously causing violence to them. They don't appear to be trying to incapacitate you in any way.
Well, they do bite me quite often.
Oh, so they're the biting kind of ants.
They're normal black ants, but occasionally I'll feel a sting and I'll look down and there's an ant on me. And I'm like, son of a bitch, the thing is like burrowing into me and I have to smack it.
Now they're not those crazy like zombie ants, like, because there's this weird
I can't remember
what this is, that there's some insane thing that burrows into the brain of an ant. No. There's some bug things that turns an ant into a zombie and makes it climb a tree and then it bursts out of its brain. This is a real thing.
Yeah, it's something like gets into the bug and then the bug gets onto the grass and then it gets into the cow. It's really fucking weird.
Right, and I will do a little research.
Nature is fucking awesome.
And provide links to this in the show notes, because it is great. I just don't know it off the top of my head. But it's not one of those, right? It's just a normal ant, as far as you know?
As far as I know.
Because you don't just have one ant.
No, it's just the one type of ant I've only ever seen in my house. Specifically in my room, because they're not anywhere else in the house.
Now, you mentioned your sister is a control group. She leaves food out sometimes as well, and it doesn't
happen. And it's not even sometimes. It's constantly. Like, she'll have 10 or 15 cans of half-empty pop. You know, like, not even just empty cans, but like full of sugary water. And I'm diligent about taking all of my crap out, and I constantly, they'll be on my water glasses.
So your sister actually goes down to the insect pet store and buys ant chow.
Yes.
And they're just not biting. Nope. But your peanut butter crunch, they're all over that.
Yeah, exactly. No, it was weird. I specifically remember that one time with the peanut butter crunch is like, poured myself the bowl of cereal.
Well, I can't imagine.
Well, see, now I know.
I can't imagine anyone ever forgetting that.
No. I know you're currently embroiled in, as am I, the National Novel Writing Month.
Yes.
Good job, by the way. I think you and I are pretty much the only ones keeping up with the word count at this point. And I got to say, if you're painting the kind of word pictures in that book that you did with that peanut butter crunch story.
Oh, God.
You got quite a story.
If only.
Because that, as Matt says, that really paints a very, you know, distinctive, clear picture.
I thought it was the specificity of using, my goal is when I rewrite my national novel writing novel is to go ahead and use as much detail as I did in that one sentence. It was possibly the greatest thing I've ever written.
And the worst thing you've ever experienced.
I'm probably going to give a pass on doing you a read over on that one then.
If it's crawling with ants, yeah.
Well, yes.
I didn't know.
See, I had one experience, and I mentioned this on Twitter, Matt. You know this is coming, so brace yourself. When I was I don't know, 10, 12, I was playing one of the old Sierra adventure games. So it was in the heyday of like King's Quest forth. Because I remember the computer, I remember the room, but I don't remember exactly what game or when it was. But doesn't really matter. I had a soda and I left it on the desk and I walked out of the room. I might have taken a phone call or gone to the bathroom, but it was a very brief, you know, maybe 5 minute exit. I came back. It was root beer. It was supermarket brand root beer. This I clearly remember. Safeway brand, Cragmont, they called it. Took a drink and suddenly there was a roach in my mouth. A live roach. Not one that had been canned with the soda, like at the Safeway, whatever. But it had crawled in the 5 minutes that I'd left the room. It was alive in my mouth. And I spat very far and brushed my teeth for hours. And I've been scouring my brain with steel wool ever since.
Oh my God.
And see, that's why you don't leave soda out.
All right, well, if anyone wants me, I'm never going to stop throwing up.
Well, see, you've never kissed this mouth, so there's that at least.
Despite all the rumors.
Not yet, anyway.
Well, not anymore now. That'll keep you away.
Say goodbye to these, Al.
Let's see. Roach mouth or ant mouth? Who do I go with? Who's the lesser of the evils here?
I got to get that medicine back to ant mouth.
But my point is that that made me never leave anything out again. Like, I always have something reclosable, or I put something over my drink, or I put it in a glass where I can see it. That's made me scared, like, still, is 30 years later, and I'm still petrified of that happening again.
Yeah.
So I'm just, what I'm wondering is, do you have any sort of post-traumatic ant syndrome?
Well, I constantly do check bowls and the plastic bags of cereal before I pour any into anything.
So it's sort of made you OCD in a weird way.
Yeah, well, because I specifically remember going, holy shit, I'm not talking like one or two ants. I'm talking like crawling with ants.
Oh, no.
And then I looked in the bag of cereal and it's just ants all up in there. Because it had been left open, essentially. And so it was just like,
oh, woo! God.
Fucking ant orgy in my cereal. So now
And the Ant Society told, you know, still sing songs of the day they found the box of peanut butter crunch.
I think that's why they follow me, because they, you know, there's a legend.
That's like discovering gold.
Yeah. There's a legend that I will one day produce, you know, peanut butter crunch for them again.
So. Oh, this is just crunch berries. Fuck this.
Yeah, exactly. Cheerios, what the?
Peanut butter crunch.
Damn it. One day.
There's no sugar in this.
I can't explain why they are constantly on my water glasses. I don't know.
Yeah, water, you don't drink, like, sugar water, right? I mean,
not that I know of, unless they add it to our well water, or not well water, but our city water, like they do fluoride. Maybe they like fluoride. Well, I don't know.
Could be. They're anting your water?
Yes. It just comes from the tap. Matt is never going to eat or drink anything here again.
Yeah.
I'll just eat at the Taco Bell.
Two things I know about Oregon, or Oregon, or however the hell you're supposed to say it.
Oregon!
You're not allowed to pump your own gas, and ants come right out of the tap. Hot and cold running ants.
Yep, exactly. It's on the posters for the Visit Oregon, you know, tourism board and all.
The Visit Oregon. The ant state.
Well, one thing, when we drove down the coast, you know, along the coastal highway, there's a lot of dunes like near the ocean.
Yes.
So you can rent dune buggies, which we took a bunch of pictures of to rub in Matt's face, because he always wanted to ride a dune buggy, and we loved saying, "Hey, look what we could have done." And
I also got a very nice postcard from the Winchester Mystery House, rubbing that in my face.
Look what we did, and you
which
didn't.
I'm a little upset about too, because I really want to go there.
That's only a few hours from, well, several hours, but
it's you know, doable.
You could drive there. Yep. We drove there. Yeah. It's probably about as far as Canada is.
Yeah, give or take.
But my point is, now I'm picturing those dune buggies racing up these giant ants.
Well, that's what the dunes are.
Yeah.
No one...
There's sand, but if you get to the top, there's a hole and there's ants.
Yeah,
in there.
And those sand ants
are
bitches.
I'm pretty sure that was the entire basis of them.
Them.
Yep.
That's that 50s sci-fi movie about the giant ants, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's my pal Bob, who we've had on the show many times. You've met him. Every time I use the pronoun them, he says giant ants. Like,
it's also fun fact, it's also a mission in Fallout 3. Or is it these?
Giant ants?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's giant fire ants.
Oh, well.
Yes.
All about the homages, that game.
So now, do you have a mutant power, do you think? And Matt, it's good that you're here, because you're more an expert on this sort of thing than I am.
Possibly.
Do you think this is a mutant power? Do you think there's some kind of radioactive ant involved? I mean, how does this happen?
Maybe. It would explain why I take directions from queens so well.
Well, does that come up
a
lot?
Good point.
No. But
if it did.
But if it did, I would obey.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we don't fall under the monarchy again, because
bad news.
Still
guys,
a better power than heart.
I'm a sleeper cell.
Well, it is definitely a better power than heart. You're an ant sleeper cell.
Yes. If the ants ever rule the world, they've already got me in position.
Well,
I, for one, welcome our ant overlords. Yes.
That's just because you're dating one.
Well, yes.
Maybe I'm an ant golem and I'm not aware of it.
Oh, that could
if you're
be.
If you're three ants in a mouse suit, I'm going to be really mad.
Now, there was that episode of The Tick where there was that whole woman made of ants, and she was dressed kind of like Carmen Sandiego with the coat and the hat. But then when The Tick, like, grabbed her shoulder, she fell apart into a million component ants.
Yeah, like that.
And, oh, yeah.
It freaked him out, and he ran away.
Oh, yeah, I remember that now. After working so hard to block out that episode.
See,
I just, The Tick ran, ants in pants! And he ran.
See, my reference was immediately to Buffy in that episode with the maggot guy. Ugh.
Oh, yeah, Maggot Man.
Did he like to come over to your house and play video games?
If only. He was an assassin.
I don't remember. I mean, I've seen Buffy a few times through. I just don't remember that particular one. But ants. Ants are what we're talking
about.
Yes,
ants.
Here. So, I feel like that's it, yeah. Really. I feel like people need to know about this. I feel like someone associated with the show has a strange power, and people need to be aware of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, the only other ant story that I had talked about was that one day I moved my external hard drive and a flood of ants came from underneath and inside of it. Like, a flood.
That's... See, now that's just a Terry Pratchett reference there, because he's got the computer at Unseen University, and it's a pun. It's a terrible pun, but it says Ant Hill inside.
Oh, does it? Oh. Dang it.
Yeah.
Well, this was, I believe it's because I spilled a glass of Mountain Dew on my desk, and I just apparently didn't clean up over there, but... There were so many ants, dude. It was so scary.
There was a movie in the 80s called Electric Dreams. And actually, Dave is aware of this as well. We tried to go look it up, and I think the only place you can watch it is YouTube. Like, nobody's put it out on DVD because it wasn't very good. Matt, do you remember when you watched Twin Peaks? Do you remember the creepy shut-in guy, the boring character that was involved with Laura Palmer? He was the main guy in that, in Electric Dreams. He spilled champagne on his new computer, and it became sentient, and was trying to compete with him with a lovely cellist in his apartment complex.
Well, artificial intelligence is love cellists.
Well, I just remember the computer simulating cello sounds and making the girl think that it was, you know, a musician.
Wow.
But anyway, what I'm saying is, if you spilled Mountain Dew on your computer, maybe it came alive.
Yes.
But maybe instead of being an alive computer, it became ants.
Well, it was just the, you know, the keyboard and the external hard drive, apparently. So maybe that equals Ant Hill. I don't know the math. I'm not good at science.
Yeah, I think that's where we're stuck here, is none of us are particularly science.
That is true.
And no.
If anyone knows, please write in. Let us know if you know how Mal's ant situation came about, or how she can use it to her advantage, or how we can gross Matt out further.
Hey, Matt, here's a picture of an ant queen with an egg sack.
this has been in your girlfriend's mouth.
Oh, God.
See, Mal, I think, you know, you and I agree on some things, disagree on some things, but I think we're definitely on the same page when it comes to, you know, making Matt barf.
Yeah, I don't... Ugh. I'm okay with this.
I think we
this.
Found some common ground here.
Yeah, it's... I didn't know you'd have such a violent reaction to ants.
It's really hard to say until it happens. I have one final story, and then we'll end the segment here. This is true.
Oh, good.
It's not the roach thing. It's not as bad. It is ant-related, though. There's one time I went and took my contact lens out, and there was an ant crawling across my eye.
Oh, Jesus fucking Christ! Oh!
Yeah. True story. Totally happened.
Oh, that's it. I quit.
And with that, we will be right back.
Hello, ladies. Do you enjoy female-oriented erotica, classic cinema, and the feeling of insects crawling under your skin? Then Sarcastic Voyage Industries has the product for you. Yes, it's the Sarcastic Voyage Audiobooks Incredibly Specific Fetish Division presents creepy voice actors of the 1940s and 50s reading Harlequin romance novels. you'll be simultaneously titillated and skeeved out by the dulcet tones of such performances as the Maltese Falcon's Peter Lorre reading The Ruthless Billionaire's Virgin.
She groaned softly as he teased her with his lips, and with his tongue and teeth reminding her of what came next. He felt so hard, toned, and warm as her hands found her breasts, and he tasted of warm, hungry men. But she shouldn't. They mustn't. Her hips were already tilting, thrusting, inviting. Shall we be captives here for long? As long as it takes, he promised, huskily.
Or who could forget Lorre's famed screen partner, Sidney Greenstreet, and his profoundly arousing and disturbing rendition of Purchased, His Perfect Wife.
It became everything she needed. The touch of his hands as he shaped her body, savoring every inch of it as he drove her wild. She used the edge of her teeth where she could, and heard his husky groan in response. With one deep, pulsing thrust, he entered her, instilled until she began to toss her head from side to side in helpless frustration. Then he moved it.
Yes, we've got all the greats, even including the incomparable Vincent Price, who reads Virgin Mistress, Scandalous Love Child.
The pleasure was unbearable. She didn't know if it was the pregnancy hormones or the intensity of her engorged breasts, but when he suckled her nipples, her back arched as she desperately pressed against him. She reached her hand between her legs and gave an abrupt cry, pressing one finger, then two, languorously, as if he had all the time in the world.
Yes, we've made these in massive quantities, because presumably someone, somewhere, would enjoy them. So act now, and get Lorre,
Buttocks,
Greenstreet,
Vulva,
and Price,
a penis,
while supplies last.
All titles and content of Harlequin romance novels are genuine. Due to reasons of making up our own, wouldn't be as funny. Please don't sue us, we're just doing this for sexual gratification.
And now, we bring you the very first installment of the recently unearthed serial, Sherlock's Holmes, Scourge of the Impure. In this evening's episode, our heroic detective applies his voluminous knowledge of the peoples of the world to solve a murder most foul.
Holmes, you've been in Sir Daftonshire's library examining his lifeless corpse for an hour now. What have you been able to deduce?
It's very clear to me, Watson, that this was the work of someone living in this building, known to the Daftonshires, perhaps a member of their very own flesh and blood, blue though that blood may be.
Are you quite sure, Holmes? This appears to be a common robbery gone awry. The victim was...
The victim was sitting in a library on the first floor of his home when the supposed intruder broke in through a window, relieved him of his valuables and his very life. Yes, I'm quite positive.
Please explain.
Very well. As the murder appears to have taken place just after 6 p.m., no Irishman could have done this, as this is held to a man, as the hour that our potato-eating friends must be in attendance at a drinking establishment. As a people, they would just then have been all too collectively inebriated to use a loo, much less orchestrate a robbery.
Oh, dear.
I imagine at this point your thought is, a celestial, perhaps. Again, not possible. For it is well known that they fear their own image and cannot approach a reflective surface, such as a window, of any sort. An African, you say? Books are their bane, Watson. Not a chance.
I think I'm going to need to sit down.
Belgians, perhaps. But then where are the scales all Belgians shed that they're too lazy to clean up? Maybe an Eskimo?
Several ethnic and regional minorities later?
Jew! Can't enter a home without an invite. Russian! Leaves a thick aromatic musk for at least 2 days. Australian, hail of dead birds. So you see, Watson, it could only have been someone within the vicinity of the purest blood who broke...
There's a note in Daftonshire's hand. I was able to pry it loose, read it, track the suspect indicated, cause him to confess, and have him arrested since you began. He was a common thief, Holmes.
Of what persuasion?
I didn't ask.
Aha! An Austrian. They're known to cloud the minds of investigators and prevent the truth from emerging.
I'll be in the carriage, Holmes.
Welsh! They wear men's skins like petticoats. Maybe he was Martian.
Tune in next week when our intrepid duo investigates the case of the chaotic carriage.
Holmes, all we know is that the driver of this particular hansom cab, before fleeing the scene, careened off the street, striking this fruit vendor dead. How could you possibly... possibly discern the origin of the suspect from that?
Elementary, my dear Watson. The angle of the vendor's stand from the street would be impossible to see for someone using only 30% of their vision. Given the very nature of their ocular physiology, we are on the hunt for a celestial.
Dear God, Holmes, it could just be a case of a terrible driver.
By Jove, Watson, you are right. It could be a woman.
Unbelievable.
Well, now, it's Hef 3, and time for the adventures of Nick and Willikins.
And now the adventures of Nick and Willikins.
Last time, you'll recall, our heroes were trapped in a horribly ingenious death trap that they had but seconds to escape from.
Willikins, I order you to free us. If I die, I shall be very cross with you.
Sir, much as it surprises me, I'd rather like to survive this experience as well. But let's see if I remember my lock-picking skills from butlering school. Let's see, like this here. Rotate 90 degrees. Sir, if you could just hold your finger here for a second.
If I must.
And there.
Willikins, you did it! You freed us! I may not have you spayed after all as a reward.
Oh, good. Something to look forward to. Now we may, sir, let us vacate Nick Hall as quickly as...
Not so fast!
Hello, Errol. I thought you were dead again.
Not in the slightest. And if I know my brain, which I do, by the way, there's still a way to make a tidy bit of profit out of this ridiculous ensemble.
Out of being trapped in a castle about to be destroyed by a rocket.
The true businessman can turn around any situation to his advantageousness. It's just a matter of finding the correct means to go about it.
While you do that, I'd appreciate if my young annoyance and I might just slip past you and vacate the premises.
Oh, must we, Willikins? I want to see what happens.
What happens is our fiery demise, sir.
You're so morbid, Willikins. We shall be as safe as...
And that was the end of Nick and Willikins. As the rocket pierced the ground of Nick Hall, that great old house was utterly destroyed. A mere speck next to the angry fury of the great skyward-bound missile. Yes, it... Oh, wait, there they are.
What the hell happened? Are we still alive?
It certainly appears so. Seems Nick Hall was carried by the rocket out of England and indeed Earth's atmosphere.
What? We're in space?
So it would seem.
Oh, that's the stupidest thing I ever heard.
Indeed. And, sir, what are you doing?
We made it, Willikins! Look!
Please don't open the window, sir.
But we did it! Look! We're in the colonies!
I see the issue. No, you are in fact mistaken, sir. This is in actuality the moon. You can tell by the lack of oxygen and the general mooniness.
No, little bleeder's right. This is America. It's dark, dusty, grey, and lifeless, with no intelligence to be found. We've landed in Arizona!
How droll.
Come, Willikins, let's investigate. I want to see a Disneyland.
Sir, please don't open the...
What new adventures await our heroes in Arizona? Can any adventures be found there? What's Phoenix like this time of year? How many angry letters will this show receive from enraged Phoenix inhabitants? Find out on the next exciting adventure of Nick and Willikins. God, they just won't die.
And we're back.
Hey, folks.
And we have some mail to read. Every week, every time. It's like, we're back, we got mail. You know.
We need a mail segment song.
You know, I used to do that.
Just so that we don't have to introduce it every week. Just like, here's the mail, here's the mail, here's the mail, here's the mail.
Yeah, I guess we can do that.
That was terrifying.
I used to have a little, viewer mail. You know, that was basically that, but... It wasn't that little whatever the hell you just did.
That song was incredible.
All right. I don't know. A plane was going over. I didn't hear you. So.
Of course you didn't.
And we had some Skype issues, and I'm trying
also
to be polite.
Also, you exploded. And
also, it was terrible, and I'm trying not to tell you that.
Since when do you care what I think?
Well, I gotta keep you interested. Like, I gotta... Listen, there is a fine balance between keeping you terrified of my judgment and just having you say, fuck it, I'm not gonna do this. Why do I care what that guy thinks? I have to make you think I'm gonna give you praise at some point. I can't ever give it to you because that's the carrot dangling in front of you. But if there's no carrot, then you're just gonna say fuck it and you're gonna go away.
That's true.
See, this is more elaborate than you think.
Oh man, I missed when I was ignorant.
Well, now you know. Now we know. All right.
And now we have mail.
We do have mail, and I'm looking at it, and I'm seeing Clusterflunk stuff here, and I'm liking that. And I'm seeing some other things, which are also good. So why don't we look at the mail?
Mail.
Yeah, that we received here. Okay, first one comes from Adam Coester.
Okay.
And he writes, hola. I assume hola, but, it's not from anyone who is apparently from a Spanish-speaking country, so I assume it says hola.
Hola for a dola.
Yes. Shoot for some clute. Life has always well, but presentedly it's great. And there's a link here, and it says see you later. I think this is probably spam.
Oh, good. Thanks.
So Adam Coester is apparently now a Nigerian prince, so he's doing pretty well for himself.
Good for him.
He came to life. Good for him. Next one comes from Deke, who I referred to as a stupid person earlier. I apologize for that, Deke. I'm sure this question is going to be brilliant. What the hell ever happened to Ramblin' Root Beer? I'd sell my collection of Flonk's hair to get one, but I can't find it. So what the hell happened to it? Nope, I take it back. You're stupid.
Is that a thing? Do you know what he's talking about?
Ramblin' Root Beer. No, I don't. And I also don't know why he has Flonk's hair, because I was told that Flonk's hair came in, limited, it was a signature edition thing, and I thought I had all of it, and I'm very disappointed that he's selling his hair to other people.
Why do you have so much of his hair? What are you doing with that much Flonk hair?
It's not just Flonk hair. I have samples for everyone here. It's just a thing. Okay, here's the thing. You remember that the G.I. Joe episode? Actually, it was a five-part episode where they were assembling Serpentor, the Cobra Emperor.
Oh, sure.
From the DNA of history's greatest.
Okay.
Yeah, let me back up. Let me set the stage here. And you helped me understand this. I didn't really get it at first, but okay. Dr. Mindbender, the shirtless former dentist who now is Cobra's head mad scientist.
Handlebar mustache and monocle enthusiast.
Yes, whom we previously have depicted as looking like G. Gordon Liddy, because he fucking does. except G. Gordon Liddy typically wears a shirt.
Thank God for that.
Yeah. But he apparently was a dentist. And then something happened and he became a Cobra scientist. I don't really.
Right.
That,
like you do.
Sure.
My career as a dentist is over. It's time to become a ridiculous terrorist.
It's time for a new phase. I'm going to help these evil guys with my science. Okay, and then, so he gets this idea based on a dream that he had.
Okay.
He has a dream about DNA. Just about DNA, which we all have a basic grasp on. It's
well,
the molecule
dude,
that,
come on, you were around in the 80s. Everyone was dreaming about DNA. It was a thing to do.
Well, I do know that... In order to say that it had educational value, all they had to do was say deoxyribonucleic acid once per each episode in the five-parter, and they fulfilled their obligation to be educational programming. But he had this crazy idea about breeding pine trees. No, about breeding the ultimate Cobra Emperor based on a mix of DNA from history's most horrible and brilliant leaders, Alexander the Great, and Napoleon.
Napoleon was in there. Vlad
they didn't
the Impaler.
Vlad the Impaler was a totally real Dracula. Mm. They didn't say Hitler, but I feel like Hitler should have been in there.
Yes.
And then
there was two more guys.
There was more than they would always go around the world fighting. Fighting in different environments to show off what the different G.I. Joes who were equipped for different environments.
Right.
They'd go where the snow guy could fight, and they'd go where the water expert could fight, and so forth.
Someone bring out pea soup. He could help us.
Yes, exactly. Someone bring out shore leave.
What are you guys doing? Looking for DNA? I'm down with that. Sphinx!
So, yeah, anyway, what I'm doing is collecting Flonk's hair and other people's hair and teeth
fingernails.
Fingernails, toenails, that sort of thing. I was trying to think if there was a single word that covers both fingernails and toenails, but I don't think that there is.
I think in one case you have an arm.
But I mean, that guy has, like, crazy lizard powers, and he just grew another one, so I don't feel bad about that.
Oh, yeah, arm guy.
I'm not supposed to reveal who that is, but it's Adrian. Anyway, what I'm trying to do is clone the perfect Sarcastic Voyage guest.
Oh, good.
So that's why our first year, remember we had all those different guests. We had all those different people on. And some people are like, how come you don't do that anymore? Like, you used to have guests, and now it's more about the prepared material and just you and Matt. It's because that phase is over. I got all the DNA I needed, and now we're moving forward to something else.
Yes. Now, what people don't know is that the device he's going to use to clone that amalgamation of horror is run almost entirely on bits, which is why the show is now in the format it is.
Yes, we had to power the bits machine, the bits mill. Mm-hmm. And the submarine we used to have just couldn't handle it. Like, just was not constructed to handle that.
Doesn't have the bits engine needed to run that much bits power.
Right. It was 8-bit and we needed 16-bit. So we've taken care of that now. Dave with his lab, which I guess we're still going with that whole idea. has graciously set us up with this, and I have my DNA tanks here. I'm looking at them. They're all neatly labeled with those little red labels like Batman had in his Batcave.
Of course.
And it's all, it's all ready to go.
You're not using hard water.
No, of course not. Because then they would just explode.
Well, yeah.
But anyway, to get back to the original question, that is why I have Flonk hair, because Flonk is part of this, equation. There's some Adrian in there. There's some... now I'm going to forget to name people and they're going to feel left out. There's a bit of everyone in there, trust me. Yes. Those are just two names because I'm thinking of beards for some reason and I'm just thinking of bearded guys. So there you go. There's some Chuck in there.
This new master guest is going to have the most luxurious beard of them all.
Yes.
And that's why he'll turn against you.
As long as I don't put Matt DNA in there, he should be able to maintain beard integrity.
Well, no, you want good guests.
I wasn't even going there. I'm just saying you your genes are gonna reject the beard.
That's true.
You can't grow a beard.
No, I can't.
So you're not an alien.
I can grow arms though, which is weird.
Can you regrow arms?
If I chopped off your arm,
would you grow it off?
I haven't tested that yet. It feels like it's not really worth the risk.
Really? You don't want to play Star Wars? Because I totally could go for chopping your arm off for science.
Oh, I'm sure.
And for playing Star Wars. And for chopping your arm off.
That's not a lightsaber. That's a fire axe. I don't see the difference.
I'm just going to go when I do it. So, it's
fine. Painted it green. Are you happy now?
I could paint it purple if you'd rather. But, I feel like that's Mace Windu's axe, not mine. All right. So, Deke's question was about Ramblin' Root Beer, which I've now had time to look up. I'm looking in Wikipedia, and I'm not looking in the simple English version. I'm looking in the normal version. Which says, wow, that is that. Okay, I got to post a picture of that can because that is as vintage as you get.
Let's see here.
Oh my God. That can design is my childhood. That is so quintessentially late 70s. The colors and the font. Wow. I want that to come back now. It was a root beer made by Coca-Cola. The product disappeared after Coca-Cola acquired Barks in 1995. A famous ad campaign for the product featured Sarah Jessica Parker.
Huh.
So there you go. I don't know. I love that can. I love the ugly late 70s. There's a fondness that I have for the design sensibility, the aesthetic of, 1978 America, which is like...
Holy shit, that looks awesome.
Doesn't it? You picture that in an avocado green refrigerator that is in a basement that has rust orange carpet and wood paneling.
I love it.
Yes. And a couch that's like mustard yellow.
Yep.
Like that was, and then everything else in wood paneling. Everything in wood paneling. Our current house, the one we just moved into... has wood paneling, actually.
Oh, nice.
Like it's an old house, and the living room, like the wall where the TV is, as wood paneling, and Amanda just hates it. She, we painted before we moved in because, we wanted to give everything a fresh coat of paint. We wanted it to look nice, and you can't paint over wood paneling because it's kind of, it doesn't really take paint. So she's like, we have to cover it with every, do they make a TV in these dimensions? Can we just cover the whole thing? Like, put up some pictures? I don't know, a subway poster? Can you just stand there? I don't want this to be. And I'm just thinking, oh, but that's the 70s.
That's why I don't want this to be.
Yeah. You can't appreciate it. All right. We got one here from Flonk. And he says, Dear Matt and Al, if applicable, I've read the question. It's actually not applicable in this case. You saw Red State, right? What did you think of it? I thought it was an okay movie, but very interesting from a creative standpoint. Almost like a big-budget student film, your pal Flonk. I will say, I give Kevin... I almost said Kevin Lynch. Kevin Smith credit for breaking out of his comfort zone and doing something different. I haven't actually seen it. But I've said this many times before. I thought with Chasing Amy and then especially with Dogma, he was really moving in a direction where he was going to try different things and not just do sort of the slacker comedies. And then he kind of lost sight of that.
Yep.
And it feels like this is him going back to that, which I like.
Yeah, no, it was an okay movie. I didn't love it, but I enjoyed it well enough. It definitely doesn't feel like a Kevin Smith movie at all.
Well, and see, that's the thing. It feels like he's one of those nerds who could branch out and try a little bit of everything. I mean, he might not be good at it all, but it just seems like if he wanted to, he could try a horror movie, he could try this, he could try that, and I'd be curious to see what he's got to say.
Yeah. No, it's billed as a horror movie, but it's really not. How to describe it. It's more of a thriller, I guess.
Okay. So there's nothing supernatural in it? It's just
No, not at all.
Okay. Well, that's fine. I mean, there's still good movies like that.
Mm-hmm. But, it was okay.
Well, if Flonk called it a bigger budget student film, would you say?
Yeah, no, it definitely felt like a bigger budget student film. Actors in it were like really good. John Goodman's in it, and he kicks ass.
I love John Goodman. It's a cliche, but really, he's good in everything.
Mm-hmm. Shut up.
MST. No, MST will make that joke occasionally, particularly in old ones. It must have been like a Joel joke, but they'll look at an actor like a character actor that everybody loves. Oh, he's good in everything. And now I feel like an asshole when I say that, but sometimes that's just true of people.
Yep.
If John Goodman's in something, he will class it up a little.
Yep.
That's just how it goes.
And I forget the guy's name, but he plays the main villain in the movie. And
is it Stephen Root? Because he's
no. Stephen Root is in it, and he was great.
Oh, okay.
But it's Michael Parks. I think that's the name. I think it's Michael Parks, and he is amazing.
If that's who I'm thinking of, he's also and I haven't seen season two yet, but in season one of Walking Dead, he was one of the more antagonistic survivors.
No, he's, God, I gotta look it up now.
All right. I'll just cover by,
Vamp, quickly.
There's a plane flying overhead. It doesn't sound like a helicopter. I know those by sound, but planes just all sound like planes to me. I actually know what one kind of helicopter sounds like, too, so it's not like I'm some kind of a savant.
Okay, it is Michael Parks.
Okay.
And he plays
is he
sort
also
of,
in Walking Dead?
I guess I can continue to look. But he plays sort of like high charisma preacher, and he is amazing.
So like Nathan Fillion in season 7 of Buffy?
Yeah, kind of.
Like that sort of, southern preacher type who's actually an awful, awful person.
The thing is, he doesn't come off as an awful, awful person, except when he does. Like, it's a really fascinating sort of character, because, he's sort of like the Fred Phelps preacher,
right.
Like, completely anti-gay and everything. But, around, they also show a lot of scenes of him around his family, and he just comes off as, sort of this nice old guy.
Right.
And then he starts taking shots at cops.
Oh, wow.
It's
That's
real,
not cool.
It's a pretty amazing performance, and...
Well, that's cool.
Seeing it, it feels like, Kevin Smith can do better. He just chooses not to because he's so lazy.
Well, and that's been my thing, and I don't want to go into all this again, but that's been my thing with him all along, is I see in him the opportunities I wish I had, and I'm not going to say that I'm as good as him. I don't know. I've never had the opportunity to prove myself. Mm-hmm. But that's the point. He has. And he is pretty good, and he's squandering that. If I had the opportunities he had, I would try to use them to do more things. But
yeah.
We're different people, and if he's happy getting high and doing whatever, that's fine. I found it disappointing because he was sort of the first, you know, nerd to break into kind of the mainstream, and now it doesn't really matter because there's plenty of other guys doing what he did. But at the time, he was sort of the first one in that wave.
Yeah.
And it feels like the wave's kind of passing him by, but that's by his choice. So, you know, hey, whatever. Mm-hmm. All right. Next question comes from Jackson. Not Jackson of the Venture Brothers, unfortunately, but a different guy named Jackson.
Alas.
And he says, do you think the folks at Burger King are Nick and Willikins fans? And he posted a link to a Burger King pizza burger, which is over 2,500 calories, the headline says. And, of course, we'll post a link to this in the show notes. The thing about the pizza burger is, while I do love that as a punchline, and I'm certainly not berating this particular question writer, that's one of the things we do try to get away from now, because that the real Nick, the one that is in no way the character, actually does like ridiculous food, particularly a pizza hamburger. And he was actually in New York recently, so I wonder if he knew about this or if he tried it, because he might have enjoyed that.
Finally!
It's about time, right?
I've been waiting and waiting. Take my check now, Burger King. Thank you.
That's the check with a Q. We don't take checks or check coups. All right. Next one comes from Jonah Luckett, and he says, deal or no deal, exclamation point. So it's not even a question. I don't know. Deal or no deal. I don't know.
Is this that Howie Mandel show?
Oh, guess the suitcase.
Oh, yeah, guess the suitcase. Okay.
Yeah, which is, that used to be Flonk's favorite TV show. Guess the suitcase. All right, another one from Deke, and he says, you failed to answer my last question. No, I think we answered your last question, but all right. He's talking about rodeo again.
Oh, God.
So he means his last question from last time. Look, guys, I know that rodeo maybe isn't your thing, but I already invested $132,000 in riding stock, $22,350 in arena fees, and $8 on green room refreshments. I'm going to lose some money in this venture if you don't commit to participating in a rodeo event. I know big-time podcasters like yourself may laugh at my paltry investment as you use $100 bills to light your cigars made of $100 bills. Perhaps I shouldn't have assumed you'd be all over a rodeo. Would it help if I told you the proceeds are going to charity? Well, they are. They're going to the Deke Winsome Foundation for a Better World for Deke Winsome. With Chase Dracula Love, Deke. I thought we devoted a good 5 minutes of whatever show that was to talking about rodeo, didn't we?
We did, and I'm much more interested in talking about how I don't actually use cigars made with $100 bills. I am so much more rich than that I smoke cigars made from Cuban money. You can't get that in America.
No, you can't get that in Cuba.
No.
That's pretty impressive. And whereas I just like to chew shredded money.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's better for your lungs.
Yep. Makes a good shampoo, too.
Oh, yeah. Money shampoo? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, money's made of hemp, so there's that.
It's true.
If you're one of those hemp people.
If you're a hemp enthusiast.
Yeah.
You like rope a lot.
I think you know what I'm really saying if you read between the lines. Hippies.
Fucking hippies.
All right. Next question comes from English Gav. And it says, don't shoot me, but this is a comics-related question. Well, more a movies question, but comic movies. You know, if this is the only one, that's fine. It's just when we only get questions on one subject, it's like we don't have a ton to talk about. So, you know, that's all. I do feel bad about dedicating quite a bit of last show to bitching about that, and I do apologize. Ask us what you like. Just, you know, maybe mix it up a little. That's all. Maybe give us a chance to talk about things that aren't that.
Like horses.
Yeah, like horses.
How much I hate them.
Here we go again. Now we're going to hear from the Lauras. Well, Laura.
Well, that'll get some mail in, so.
Well, I mean, I like hearing from Laura. Don't get me wrong. I'm not like, oh, God, Laura. But it's like, you know, great. Now we're going to get her angry is what, kind of what I'm saying. And English Gaff says, and whilst not exactly new news either, but what's your thoughts on the British invasion currently going on with superhero movies? More and more British writing, acting, and directing talent seem to be heading up your superhero movies, which makes a change from us being forever cast as the villain. Any thought on why this seems to be happening or on British preying American or Kryptonian superheroes besides the amusing accents? Yours in Krypton, Super Gav. I emphasize the word your superhero movies. I think they're our superhero movies. I think these generally perform well across the globe, and while the characters may have been created here, I don't think most of them are quintessentially American. Like, I guess Superman is, but the rest of them don't have to be, and Captain America.
I don't even feel that Superman's, like, really...
Truth, justice, in the American way is the only thing
you got me there with the American way.
And the whole Midwest, like, Smallville is very quintessentially America. Mm-hmm. Like, I guess you could be Canadian as well, but, like, I feel like Superman could definitely be Canadian.
Smallville ain't that American. They filmed it here.
Well, you got a fair point there. But, I mean, the feel of it, you know, the wheat fields of Kansas, blah, blah, blah. But, no, he could totally be Canadian. There would be no difference in the character if that ship had crashed a little further north.
Unless it crashed in Russia, and then we'd have a Mark Miller comic.
Right, exactly.
Only good, so that's surprising.
Well, you know, he's written some good stuff.
He has.
But no, I feel like if he'd been up there, then it would have been less of a hike to the Fortress of Solitude, too, which would have been nice.
It's more of a quick commute.
Yeah, exactly. But no, I don't know. I mean, apart from Captain America, I don't think there's anything quintessentially American about any of them. I mean,
no.
You know. I don't know. I mean, I get that the big movies are made here, and, you know, other cultures feel like, you know, well, America's blah-de-blah dictating there, blah-blah-blah. You know what? I'm kind of glad that that's opening up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see more of that kind of thing. I mean, there was a brief period, and it was mostly a joke, but there was a brief period where they said that Donald Glover, the guy who plays Troy on Community, was in the running to play Spider-Man, and I thought that would have been great. Like,
that would have been awesome.
Get somebody who isn't a white guy playing a superhero, that'd be fine. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I mean, I don't mind when they change that stuff up as long as it's still a good movie. Doesn't really bother me. So, no, I don't care. Plus, I love hearing an English person do a fake American accent. That's hilarious to me.
Oh, yeah. So. You know, we've used that before.
Yes, most recently. In fact, English Gav, I think you know all about that. God, that's funny to me. Might not be funny to anybody else, but it sure is funny to me.
If it's not funny to you, get your own damn podcast.
Yeah. I don't know. And I've heard this thing about English people playing the villains before, and I don't know. I mean, I think it's a way to make them sound smart without writing them smart. Because
mm-hmm.
The knee-jerk is, oh, well, English accent, he must be smart.
He must be smart, and the accent also means that he's not from here, so he's different.
I don't think that's it. Especially like in Star Wars, where all the Imperial officers were British.
Well, that's just because in the Star Wars universe, all planets are British.
But Han Solo
doesn't sound British, except for Tatooine, and I guess Han was from Corellia.
Yeah, and half of Alderaan, because Princess Leia sometimes had a British accent. Which Carrie Fisher, incidentally, completely called herself out for when she did her one-woman show that we saw.
And that's one of the many reasons Carrie Fisher kicks ass.
Yeah, she's like, I don't know. I got on the set, and Peter Cushing was there, and Alec Guinness was there, and I don't know. I slipped into a British accent. I don't know what to tell you.
Diplomatic mission to Alderaan.
Yeah. I recognized your foul stench when I was brought on board.
You're part of the Rebel Alliance and a traitor. Take her away.
Yes. No, that's our Vader, honey.
I know, but I really like that delivery.
All right. I don't know. I feel like it sets them apart. Like, particularly in Star Wars, it almost makes it a subtle class warfare thing.
That I believe, yeah.
They're the upper class. They're the, you know, they're the ones in power. They're the, you know, and British is just easy shorthand for that.
Yeah. Lord Vader, what is to be done about this horrible Rebel Alliance? There must be something.
Rebellion.
Oh, you think you can come up here and take away all our God-given rights to fly around in gigantic spaceships? Blowing up whatever planets we want to?
Yeah, where are the 99%? Shut up, Luke.
Occupy Endor.
Yeah. I'm sure that joke hasn't been made yet.
Nope.
We're topical on this show.
No, I don't know. Skippy.
Star Wars is always the go-to reference, but I mean, there's other things. I don't know. In general, though, I think British, I don't think people think British and evil. I think people think British and it just sets them apart. It's different. It makes them seem educated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. I mean, and then it becomes a cliche because everyone's done it and you're like, ooh, you know what movie wasn't very good, but the villain was good? Robin Hood, Alan Rickman. And then everyone in the 90s wanted to do that again.
Mm-hmm.
And so it turned into that.
Well, I mean, speaking of Alan Rickman, he was a British man playing a German villain.
So he was. And then Jeremy's Iron did the same thing in Die Hard 3.
Yes, he did.
Did you hear? Did we talk about this on the show? I can't remember the subtitle of the new...
Today is a good day to Die Hard.
Yes.
Yeah, I know we talked about this.
Okay, because it sounds like Die Hard on a Klingon to me.
I know. I don't know if we talked about it here or on Post-Atomic Horror, but...
Yeah, that's just terrible. Just terrible.
Yep. Although if they get Michael Dorn for it as the villain, all will be forgiven.
Yes, but he'd have to put on a British accent.
Yes.
All right. Next one comes from Shauna, contest winner Shauna Zioko.
All right.
And she said, the war isn't over yet. And she's given us a picture that says the most annoying font in the world. And it's a picture. It's written in Comic Sans.
Motherfucker.
So I'll post this in the show notes. But I don't know. I just, font wars just don't really, you know, don't really, I don't really care. I always thought the whole thing started because designers, and at the time we were talking to Annie and she just stood in nicely for all designers, but it wasn't just Annie. It became a Scott and Annie thing. But at first it was like, Annie, why do you guys hate Comic Sans so much? Here's a fun, I don't know if we ever mentioned this. Do you know what Comic Sans, this is true. This isn't me making up stuff. This isn't a Matt fact because I'm not Matt.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know where Comic Sans came from for real?
No, please tell me.
This is totally true. It is based on the lettering, the handwriting of Dave Gibbons in Watchmen.
Really?
Yes.
You're kidding.
No, this is only the first part. This gets weirder, and a lot of people already know this, but I didn't think you did. The people who designed it wanted a friendly, easy to read font that kind of puts you at ease. And okay, well, this is, you know. And he's like, well, comic books. And then the comic book he happened to have wasn't a particularly friendly book, but it still had good handwriting in it. He's like, okay, here's my guide. Because comics are, you know, everyone can read comics, but it still looks kind of like handwriting. So mm-hmm. Let's base a font on this. And they actually, I believe they got his permission because I know Dave Gibbons knows and he hasn't sued. So I think they cleared it through him.
Wow.
But here's the second part of that. The people who designed it, who actually own it, I believe, or at least did own it, and who went through all that were Microsoft, creating the now defunct, this is again totally true, Microsoft Bob.
What?
You remember this?
No.
This was a product that existed very briefly. It bombed. It was their attempt to make an easier, friendly, more accessible version of Windows that was sort of light and bubbly and you know, sort of like the plain English version of Windows.
Oh my God.
In fact, I'm going to ask Wikipedia about it now so I can tell you. It was a Microsoft software product which provided a new non-technical interface to desktop computing. It was one of Microsoft's more visible product failures.
Microsoft Bob.
It's called Microsoft Bob.
That's so... Ugh.
Yeah, it's fascinating. But anyway, Comic Sans was created based on Dave Gibbons' handwriting for Microsoft Bob. Very strange sorted history for that font.
God, the world is weird.
I know. Isn't it great?
By the way, you totally rolled into the John Hodgman audiobook thing when you started telling me about that. You're just like, have you heard about this, Jonathan? You know, you know where Comic Sans comes from, don't you? No, I don't, John. Really?
No, see, because then he would berate him and insult him and call him feral. And, you know, now is not the time for that. The opening segment is the time for that. I usually don't insult you during the mail. That's just one of those little rules
that
I have.
That's just rude.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you don't come into a man's home, open his mail, and insult him. That's bad form. next one comes from John Wiggins, and he says, what number is Matt thinking of? 7. Is it 7?
No, it's 48.
That's not a multiple of 7 either. Oh well. Almost is.
Actually, if you listen to me talk, I'm usually thinking of the number 8.
Really?
Yeah.
How would I know that from hearing you talk?
Because, like, whenever I have to make up a fake number for something, it's either 8 or it has 8 in it.
That's strange.
Yeah, it is, but it's true.
There was a time, this sounds incredibly gay, and it's not. I would tell you if it was. I have nothing to hide. I shared an apartment with Famous Mark. Mm-hmm. You don't need to take a drink anymore. You can if you want, but you don't have to. And we actually had the Ernie and Bert set up where we had beds on the opposite sides of the room because it was a single bedroom. And we were lying there, and I was trying to sleep, and Mark's muttering. And I can't fall asleep because Mark's muttering. And so I kind of strain my ears. Like, what is he saying? Is he talking in his sleep? Is he talking to me? What's going on over there? And I guess he was talking in his sleep because I asked him about it the next morning, and he didn't remember. I'm positive he was saying 8, 8, 8. Just over and over and over again, all night long. He was saying ape, but I'm pretty sure it was 8.
So, like, is he John Lennon or?
I have no idea. He didn't know what it was.
Number 8.
I mean, it became a big inside joke between the two of us, and that's why I remember it 20 years later because we just joke about it now. But yeah, I guess he got stuck counting a sheep. I don't know. I honestly have no idea. He just 8. So maybe you guys are, you know, maybe there's some connection there. Maybe you guys are 8 people.
Weird.
I'm not one of those 8 guys, so I couldn't tell you.
And thank God for that.
But, you know, you 8 guys, maybe you got something going. I don't know.
Yeah, well, you non-8 guys got something going too.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know that I have a number. Like when I write stuff and I try to come up with a random number, I really try to keep an idea of what random number I used last time, so I don't use the same one exactly for that reason.
Really?
Yes. Like, I don't have them written down, and I don't exactly remember, but it's like, I will remember if I've used, you know, 47 more than, you know, I used that last time. Mm-hmm. Got to use something different. Like, I try to be aware that I'm not, to me, comedy, a lot of comedy is about the unexpected. It's about saying something you don't expect, and if I'm always using the same number, that's not unexpected.
Right.
So I try to be kind of aware of that. It's like there's a stand-up comedian, Richard Lewis, who's been in the business a million years. He's done a bunch of sitcoms. Pretty much everyone knows who he is, I think. You probably know. You just might not know him by name.
Yeah.
But I remember watching – because I watched a ton of stand-up when I was a kid. It was on HBO. It was everywhere. It was like the comedy boom of the 80s. And I watched him a bunch of times, and every time he had to come up with a number, he said 111. I remember this because his hour-long stand-up special, he said 111, like 111 times. It's like, that just, it stopped being funny after the third time. It's like, okay, I gotta not be that guy. I gotta not repeat myself and say 111 every time, because that doesn't sound funny at all. So, good memory. All right, next one comes from Scott C. from Need Coffee here, he says.
All right.
I think we already know who he is, but he introduces himself that way every time.
Yes.
He's the one who wants you to like kids.
Oh, yeah. It's not going to happen,
weird
Scott.
Agenda. No, he's got this weird agenda where he wants you to like kids, and I don't really get that, but...
Yeah, it's not going to happen. Babies are gross.
I, you know... My whole thing always was that I lived in a house where there was a bouncy castle outside the window, and I just had to get away from there. And now that I'm away, I figure I'll drift back to the middle, and I won't completely hate children anymore, but not quite there yet. But someday it'll happen, and I'll be child neutral. Still don't want any for the love.
Well,
of crap.
No,
never.
Ew,
never.
Not going nuts here.
No. But I just might not want them to, you know, leave or whatever. Might actually have a conversation with Juan, that kind of thing.
So you're a small child.
How's that going for you? Yeah, I do like the Hodgman expression, a human child. I try to use that when I can.
You know what a human child is, don't you, Jonathan?
Scott actually isn't asking anything about children, so that's nice. He says, you two seem to be putting out a fair amount of audio comedy skits lately. And nice of you to notice. Have you thought about writing something a bit more serious, like horror or mystery?
I think about writing horror a lot, but I'm not very good at it.
I'm going to mock this question, but at first I think I should say it's actually not a bad question. But Scott, this is a fucking comedy show. What's wrong with you? Seriously, if we were making jokes about, I don't know, whatever the hell we were just talking about, and then we cut to like a serious mystery. Like, okay, that might actually be funny once.
Actually, yeah, I would do that once just to have done that.
Yeah, exactly. That would be fun to do. But for the most part, no, that's not what we do here. This is a comedy show. It's always been a comedy show. It will always be a comedy show.
Yeah.
And if we wanted to do something like that, we'd do it somewhere else. That said, I could see you writing horror. I could totally see, like, sometimes the stuff we collaborate on, you go down that road and I'm like, where's the joke? And you're just coming up and you come up with some cool imagery and you come up with some creepy stuff and it's like, there's really no joke here. And you're like, no, I just think that's cool.
Yep. No, and if you follow me on Twitter, I occasionally do the horror stuff I used to fall asleep, where I'll just type in the creepiest thing I can think of and then pass out.
Yeah, and see, that's always, like, because I get up, you go to bed very late and I get up very early, mm-hmm. So usually I get up about 5:30, and you've just gone to bed at, like, 3:30 or 4.
Yep.
And so Twitter's pretty quiet that time anyway, so it's usually the last couple of things that are in my stream. I don't even have to go recap, it's just kind of there. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, Matt's got bugs under his skin, and eyeballs are crawling across his ceiling. That's nice.
Looks good like that him. 6-foot-long maggot's back in Matt's room again.
How's it going, Brundlefly? I don't know. Somebody asked me. Mel actually asked me this because we're both participating in the National Novel Writing Month thing. Mm. And actually, I think she and I, at this point of our group of friends, are the only ones really sticking with it. So yeah,
Nano Spite Mo.
Yeah, that is what I am doing it. I initially did it to prod a mutual friend into doing it, and she bowed out. And I'm not about to spite her, you know, after the fact. I promised that I wouldn't do that, but she ended up having some other personal stuff that she had to tend to, and she couldn't finish. But I wish Mal nothing but the best of luck. This is totally on me to prove to myself, out of spite for myself. Mm-hmm. That I can do this. I'm going to fucking throw this away. I'll probably show it to someone just to say, I want you to look this over, see that there are 50,000 words, see that I didn't cheat. Because, it is sort of on the honor system.
Right.
And then once someone has verified that, I'm going to throw it in the trash because I really hate it. I feel like I started running in a marathon and my ankle broke and I'm not a quitter and I just want to keep running, but it is not fun. It is, in fact, kind of painful.
But that is a really sad metaphor, dude.
Isn't it? But, you know, it's also accurate. That's my dog howling. The delightful howl of a beagle.
Oh, that's fine. She's just happy to have a yard now.
No, I love it. I don't. Yeah. That doesn't bother me in the least. But
plus beagle baying is awesome.
Yeah, it is. And she doesn't do it much. Like, there's, there's must be something out there that got her attention, and I like it. It's fun. Yeah. I am distracted. I think it was Mel who asked me, would you write something that isn't comedy? And I don't know that I can. And I'm not saying I always write good comedy, because I certainly don't. Mm. But I don't know. I don't know. Somebody, I saw an interview with Weird Al once where someone asked if he could ever do like a serious album. And he said, I think the best I could do is like a serious instrumental. But no, I can't write serious lyrics.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I am in the stuff that I do is I can't. And it's mostly because I don't think I could take myself seriously enough. Like whenever I start writing something serious, I start mocking myself and then it turns into, it turns into comedy.
Yeah.
That's half the comedy I write is me starting with something serious and then making fun of myself for doing that serious thing.
Mm-hmm.
So no.
Yeah. No, if I was going to write anything, it would be horror, but it would still be funny just because I can't really shut that off.
The thing is, I think you could do legitimately scary horror and also have characters who, said funny things to each other. But the story itself would actually be horror, like Lovecraft, but with, I don't know, Kevin Smith characters or something. Oh. Bad example, but you know what I mean.
Oh, no, because he made me sad.
In a good way, he writes snappy dialogue, yeah. And he writes, like people who are dealing with serious things sometimes, but in a funny way.
Mm. The other thing is, you can't not have some sort of humor in whatever you're writing. Just
sure you can.
I mean,
there's all kinds of humorless writing out there, and you know it.
Ugh.
That's a lot of the things that I can't relate to are because of that, because they just take themselves far too seriously.
Yeah, I personally couldn't then. That feels way too up its own ass for me.
Oh no, I totally agree.
You need that. You need something to just break the tension.
Yes, you absolutely do. But you know, some people don't care for that.
I guess.
So there you go. All right, we got some voicemails here now. Let's crack into those.
Hey, Sarcastic Voyage, it's Shauna. So, since Elmo's in charge of hell, then does that mean that Count Chocula's in hell, too? No. At least not Count Von Count. I mean, all he does is count numbers, right? Yeah. They're not very evil. I mean, if you really wanted to talk about, you know, evil Muppets going on here, you know, you wouldn't talk about Don Music. He simply banged his head on things, so he wasn't actually evil. He was just, well, manic depressive. I think he just spent way too much time around, you know, Scott. Probably. If you spend too much time around Scott, you can get kind of depressed, too. Although, you know who really was evil? Lefty the Salesman. I don't know if you guys remember him, but he was, like, always showing up and, like, trying to sell contraband and stuff like that to Ernie. Like, he even had, like, songs about, you know, would you like to buy an O? And he'd, like, open up his coat and there'd be an O. He wasn't flashing, he had clothes on, but, yeah. All right. Yeah.
Yeah, of course we know that salesman. We had him on our cover art some time ago, and we did a whole segment about him, as I recall.
Yeah, we love that guy. Would you like to buy an O?
Shh. Right. But as evil Muppets go, I don't know. I'm of the opinion that Muppets are not particularly evil. They're just, you know, while not wholesome.
Some of them are weird and crazy, but none of them.
Yeah. And there's some, you know, some unsettling stuff. I mean, okay, Simon the Sound Man, he opens his mouth and sounds come out. That's sorcery right there.
Yep. No, that is a type of witchcraft.
That is the work of Satan. Yeah, that is totally the work of Satan.
It's not good.
No, it's absolutely not good. So him. But I don't know, I mean...
When I was a kid, there was an episode, I think it was the Halloween episode, and it had Vincent Price in it.
Oh, and, that guy.
Yes, that guy. And there's a scene where him and Kermit are just sort of hanging out and talking. And for some reason, I forget why, but for some reason, Kermit opens his mouth and he has these two huge fucking vampire fangs. And he just sort of swings his neck over and chomps down on Vincent Price's neck. And it scared the ever-loving fuck out of me when I was a kid.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, Kermit back then was a bit wholesome. Now, and I don't want to be old guy who says the Muppets are bad now, because that's not what I'm saying here. But they have changed the character. Jim Henson's not operating him anymore, and they have changed the character a bit. He's not quite as wholesome as he used to be.
No.
And I don't think that would be out of place now, especially with all the parody stuff that they're doing with those guys. But back then, yeah, that would be particularly unsettling, I think.
Mm-hmm. Did you see Topless Robot posted this? Someone did a parody of the Muppet parody commercials. They did a take on Saw.
I saw a bit of that, but that wasn't real. I just assumed that was a real...
No, it wasn't real. I thought the same thing at first, but no, it wasn't real. It was pretty well done, though.
That's pretty cool.
And again, kind of disturbing. Like, you have the Muppets and, like, anything sort of scary or violent, and it really sort of rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah, they just don't belong with that, which I guess is why, you know, that joke would work.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, I don't know. They were always twisted in their own way, but there was always an internal logic there. I don't know. There's a very particular area that the Muppets operate in, as far as I'm concerned. But, you know. Again, that movie looks great for what it is, and I hope everyone enjoys it. I'm trying very hard not to criticize it, because I know people are really into it. It's just, for me, the Muppets are not the Muppets without Henson and Oz and all those guys. And, you know, someone else is using the puppets, and, you know. It's kind of like Looney Tunes. I feel the same about Looney Tunes. All the guys who did those are dead now, and it's just they're not the same anymore.
Yeah. No, I was really excited for the Muppet movie until Frank Oz did that interview a couple of weeks ago where he sort of put the whole thing down.
He did, and, you know, on the one hand, he does sound like a cranky old man, and that's another thing I really want to be aware of. I don't want to be that guy. But on the other, I don't know. I mean, at some point, the stuff from your generation gets co-opted by a new generation, and you just have to let it go. And that's where I am. I'm not going to say don't enjoy it, because it seems like people are really into it. And it seems like it's in the hands of someone who really cares. I just don't think it's in the hands of someone who really gets it, is the thing. But that's, you know, that's another thing.
I don't know. I mean, I'll definitely check it. I'm definitely going to go see it.
Yeah, and in fact, just today.
Report back on what I find.
Well, please do. Yes. And, you know, I certainly, if I were wrong, this certainly would not be the first time I was wrong about something that I loved that got changed.
Look forward to in 2025 when we do our Muppet podcast.
Yeah, I'm not committing to that just yet. All right.
This ain't your father's fucking Kermit. And then they do a metal version of Why Are There So Many Songs About Rainbows.
I will say there was a clip that I saw actually today, and I'll put this in the show notes. Topless Robot posted this. Of Kermit, well, new Kermit. I won't say fake Kermit, but I will say new Kermit. Mm-hmm. Doing a duet with Brett from Flight of the Conchords, and that was pretty cool.
That's pretty friggin' awesome.
And apparently he wrote this song in the movie. I don't know if he wrote all the music in the movie, but he wrote this particular song.
I believe I heard he did all the music for the new Muppet movie.
Okay, that's good, because those guys have a sensibility that would work really well. They're not really... They can be fairly family-friendly, and they're still funny. And I think, you know, that's not a bad fit at
cannibalism.
All. Yeah, well, I mean, they have. But they've also done a lot of stuff that's just funny, you know. They do that like they do that thing like Homestar, where they manage not to be profane, and they don't really even call attention to it. They're just kind of clean and funny, and that's just how they are.
Yeah. But then suddenly it's like, oh, that was pretty dark.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Homestar did that too, though.
Yes, exactly. That was one of the things I really liked about Homestar.
Yeah. May they rest in peace. All right, next voicemail.
Hey, gang. Hey, Adrian. Would you rather eat 5 doorknobs or eat 10 doorknobs? Look forward to the answer. Thank you. Goodbye.
I feel like we've answered this before. I feel like...
I'm pretty sure we have.
And I'm pretty sure I said that I would eat 10 because why stop at 5? I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of like the same thinking behind my National Novel Writing Month thing. Like, if I'm going to do this, I'm in it. You know, I'm in it. Let's fucking do this. I'm not going to do this at half measures. I mean, let's fucking eat some doorknobs.
Well, I mean, and no one gives a shit if you eat 5 doorknobs.
No, I mean, you're just going to be some asshole who ate 5 doorknobs. Who hasn't eaten 5 doorknobs? I mean, you know, back in my younger days, I'd get drunk and I eat 5 doorknobs. That's just, you know, I'd pass out on the couch and I'd wake up and covered in vomit with doorknob chunks in it.
And knob files. Or, knob foils. I really fucked that one up.
Knob foils?
Knob foil.
Is that a thing?
You know, the foil that you pull off of doorknobs to get at the sweet innards.
No. No. Must be a Canadian thing.
All right. Moving on.
Weird doorknob.
No, I mean, 10.
You're really going to keep... Okay, I was going to say, you're really going to keep digging this knob foil hole, huh?
But no, I'm going to clearly give you a place to edit out.
Okay. Yeah, but now I'm not, because now I think it's funny to watch you squirm. All right, next voicemail.
Hello, Sarcastic Voyage. It's Mr. Saz again. And I'm bored. Bored, bored, bored. I mean, really. Why can't Batman come by a payphone anytime soon? I know the whole city's blowing up and the Joker's going crazy and there's that whole thing with Hugo Strange, but come on. A sociopath can only play Angry Birds so many times before he goes mad. Although I have admitted I have already beaten my previous high score 7, I'm not at 9. I think I might be playing this game wrong, though. I'm not sure. Oh, wait. There's Batman. Coming by a payphone. Hold on, I'll turn on the ringer. And he's just walking by. Why isn't he answering the payphone? He jumps at the chance anytime he sees one of those stupid green bowling trophies. But he can't answer the payphone. I have to rethink my whole scheme now. Back to the drawing board. I'll talk to you later, Sarcastic Voyage.
Ah, noted supervillain Mr. Zaz checking in again. Presumably from the payphone.
There's something I really, really enjoy about Mr. Zaz playing Angry Birds.
Well, the thing is, I feel like in Gotham that the whole Angry Birds franchise would be controlled by the Penguin.
Oh, of course.
Like, it's got to be some kind of weird pyramid scheme or something, you know, something he controls.
I just feel like the Penguin needs to have, like, a cannon that shoots, like, red birds at, like, the Wayne Enterprise building.
Yeah, okay, I could totally see that.
Take that, you pigs.
Three stars.
There was time now.
Also, it's pretty sad, but my life's achievement is I have three-starred all the levels of Angry Birds holidays to this point. So that's something I've done in my life.
I'm so proud.
Well, you know, it's something. You guys all go on about your video games, about how great video games are, and I'm playing this game and that game, and this is all I got, man.
Just give me fucking Angry Birds. Come on.
Exactly. Mr. Zaz, I do feel for him, though, because, you know, he's out there, presumably in the cold, waiting for Batman to answer the payphone, and I don't know what to tell you, dude. Maybe join the 21st century?
Yeah.
We talked about this last time, but I don't think there are any payphones left. I think just that Arkham City is in such a shitty part of town.
Yeah.
That there are payphones left, but, you know, not for long.
Also, dude, it's snowing like crazy. Put a fucking shirt on.
Yeah.
I know you want to show off your little hatch marks and everything because you killed so many people, but fucking put a shirt on.
Yeah. All right.
It's winter.
You know, I looked up this Mr. Zaz guy. I gotta mention this because he called us last time a couple of times. Sure. I looked him up, and I wasn't sure how to spell it, and apparently he was in Green Acres. Mr. Zaz Gabor? Well, it's Z-S-A-Z-S-A. So he was in Green Acres, and then he slapped a cop. And that sounds like a Batman villain. So, you know. All right, next voice.
Da-da-da-da-da, the stores. Da-da-da-da-da, dead whores.
All right, next voicemail.
Hey, Sarcastic Voyage. My name's Doreen Green. And I just was told by, well, my friend Tippy Toe, that on your show there is somebody named I don't know how to pronounce it. Anyway, claiming that Squirrel Girl was, you know, a hipster. I just want to let you know that I am in no way a hipster. I am mainstream now. Not only am I mainstream, but I'm a babysitter with the Avengers. I mean, come on. They're even putting me in the latest superhero squad video game or something like that. I don't know. It sounds like fun. Anyway, to claim that I'm a hipster is just wrong. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if you find out that this Scott person is attacked by squirrels anytime soon. Or they start, you know, leaving little camps inside his car's gas tank. Anyway, I have to go. Talk to you later. Bye.
So that was Squirrel Girl. That was the person that Scott was giving us the monologue about last time.
So nice to know that she is also a fan.
I like that all these... What's that?
If you follow me on Twitter, I recently decreed that Spider-Man listens to this show.
I don't see why he wouldn't.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you know.
I've not seen any proof in any Marvel comic I've read that he does not listen to this show, so.
Well, yeah, because
he must.
I don't see why not. And, I don't know. I feel like any of those guys that have masks on could be wearing earbuds under there.
Absolutely.
Who knows what they're doing when they're just sort of, like, he's swinging around or the other guy's climbing around or whatever. Like, mm-hmm. They get a lot of time to kill where they're just kind of waiting for crime.
Yep.
And we all had those jobs where you're just kind of standing around waiting. And, you know, what better way to fill the time than listen to a podcast?
Damn it, Spider-Man. If you have time to lean, then you have time to clean. Go drain the grease trap.
If you have time to crawl, you have time to do something that rhymes with crawl. All right. Next voicemail.
Hey, Al. Hey, Matt. It's Adrian. I think I might have asked that question before, the show Would You Rather about the doorknobs, but please feel free to answer it. I just feel guilty, because if I have answered the question correctly, if I've asked that question before, it's not that great. So I'll ask it. Would you rather eat a delicious piece of cake or share a bathroom that is really gross? I can field any questions if you have any questions. You don't have to necessarily answer it right away, but I can field questions if you need any explanations or clarifications. And hope to hear back from you soon. Goodbye.
All right, typically, I wouldn't mind actually teasing this out for a while and asking some questions and getting some clarification. But as this is sort of the last time we've been doing this year, I kind of want to finish off all the old business. And I don't like cake, so I guess the bathroom one for me.
Yeah, I'll take the cake.
All right. Well, good luck with that. In fact, if I were approached with the Eddie Izzard cake or death thing, I might take death.
Really?
I really don't like cake. Yeah, I don't like cake.
That's a severe dislike of cake.
I don't like cake. If it's cake or another choice, I'll take the other choice.
You know, Irene makes a really good cake.
Yeah, I'm sure she does. And it's got like a heart of virgins in it and stuff. And yep. I feel bad because she killed all those virgins and whipped their blood into a froth. And, you know, I'll have a bite to be polite, but I just don't like cake. It's not personal.
I never feel bad about dead virgins.
Well, you shouldn't. But yeah, that's not the part I feel bad about.
They should have tried harder.
Yeah. But, you know, I do feel bad about the effort that Irene went to that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even killing them. It's all the afterwork. It's all the whipping and the beating and the frothing. I feel like there's frothing.
Sure,
like a whisk is involved.
You're sure it's frothing and not frosting?
No, I'm not sure.
All right.
If you got time to froth, you got time to frost. All right, last voicemail.
Sarcastic Voyage, it's Mr. Saz again. I was just calling because been thinking about this whole payphone thing and how it's not quite going over the way I hoped it would. So I've come up with a new devious scheme. Fax machines. Yes, I will send Batman menacing faxes, and he has to find the fax and then go across the building to the nearest fax machine in order to hear my devious story about my gambling problems. What do you think, Sarcastic Voyage? Isn't that a delightful idea? Hello? Sarcastic Voyage? Wait, why aren't you answering me? I swear if you don't answer, I'll make a couple of spaces on my offer. Oh, yes, this is a voicemail. I forgot. Silly Mr. Saz. Silly little sociopath. Oh, well. I'll just run it by someone else. Maybe Killer Croc is available. I'll talk to you later, Sarcastic Voyage.
Mr. Zaza really doesn't... Really doesn't know how phones work, does he?
Nope.
What's been all that time he spent out on the farm?
I do like now that he switched over to fax machine-based crimes, that solves the mystery of who killed Marty McFly's dad in Back to the Future 2.
McFry! Oh, hello, Fujitsu-san. This is Mr. Zaza. That's his name, right? Mr. Zaza?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I can't wait for the third Batman game, Arkham Acres. All right. That is all we have this week. That is all we have this year. Cluster Flunk is now going to happen for 3 weeks. Then we're taking a week or two off, and then we will be back.
Yep. Cluster Flunk is nigh.
Yes. And then we have to scramble to do a bunch of other things. So yes. We thank all of you guys once again for the support, for the money, for the letters, for everything you've done for us. We do appreciate it. And if you can make it out to Emerald City Con, we're going to start promoting this pretty hard come the first of the year. But I'm going to mention this right now. It is the last weekend of March, which goes into the first weekend of April. It's like March 30th and April 1st. Don't let that April 1st fool you, though. It's not April Fool's Day. It's really happening. It is a comic book convention, primarily a comic book convention that takes place here in Seattle, where I live, not too far from where Matt lives. We have done this event 2 years running. The first year, our pal Chris Page and Adam Witt and Pat Loika were kind enough to let us record a show from their table. There's a picture of a couple of people watching us do that. Mm-hmm. Then the following year, this past year, 2011, we recorded a show. We actually got a hotel room just specifically to record a show in. We had a bit of a bigger crowd, like 20 people. There's a picture of that on the cover art there. And in my head, it's like, okay, this year I want it to be even bigger. I want to see that progression. Like, we've got 5 people in 2010, we've got 20 people in 2011. I want more this time, and I think it's going to happen. I think there's a lot of cool people coming out. We're really got a lot of cool stuff planned. If you're not into comics, it doesn't matter. The con is just an excuse. No. We'll have a table with merch there. We're going to do a live show. We're going to do a lot of stuff we haven't announced yet. But really, just come say hi to us. If you're there just for the con, pop by and say hi.
Yeah. Talk to anyone that was there last year. We all had a hell of a good time.
Yeah, and a bunch of us aren't really even that into comics. I mean, I'm not that into comics. I enjoy the fact that they put on one of the better conventions right here in my backyard, and I would go just to go, just to look around, just to see what's there. But it's really just an excuse to get together. We do karaoke. That's a fucking blast. We just go out and drink and wander the town. And, you know, and really when there's a pack of like 20 of us just walking the street, you know, you feel cool. You feel like, mm-hmm. you know, these are our people. This is okay. And, you know, there's a lot of other events around that are also great, but this one's ours. This one, we have planted our flag here. Emerald City belongs to us, and we would love it if each and every one of you could make it there. And we look forward to seeing you. If you do listen to this show and you do make it out there, and maybe, as we've mentioned before, you know, you don't feel like you're part of the circle. First of all, there is no circle.
No.
But second of all, okay, if you feel like, no, they got their thing and I don't want to be part of it. Or, I mean, I'm a bit antisocial. I can relate to that. I know I just said I love being surrounded by a crowd of, you know, 20 friends, but typically I'm antisocial. I understand if you don't want to
go to our... Such is the price of fame.
Yeah. It's complicated in my brain. I understand maybe you don't want to go to our live thing or whatever. If you want, really, just stop by the table and say hi. Like, just...
Yeah.
That's it. That's what I'm saying. Like, if you don't want to do all the party stuff, all the karaoke stuff, the live show, whatever, that's fine. Just pop by our table. We'll be there all day, the whole weekend. We got merch. And what I was getting at is, if you're a regular listener of the show, come say hi. If we recognize you, if you've written to us before, if we know who you are, I'll probably just give you something. Because, you know.
Yeah. We're good like that.
We would like to break even with the merch, maybe make a couple of bucks. But really, it's there to get the word out. And this is our big chance, I think, to get some new people on board, to show our support to the old people, and just, you know, to have fun. So.
Yeah.
And again, we're going to be hammering this hard come next year, because when we start again in January, it's going to be 3 months of show prep, and we're just going to keep telling you about it. But this is, you know, you got enough time now to buy tickets, to make reservations. If you're looking at going, there's actually a good friend of the show, Caitlin, has booked a whole mess of rooms expressly for the purpose of people rooming up. We can put you in touch with her if you want to get accommodations worked out. We can make this happen. So look forward to all that.
Absolutely.
And as we steam forward now into the Clusterflunk tunnel, I don't know. I don't know where I was going with that. So we're going to stop talking now.
This installment of the Sarcastic Voyage podcast featured Ron Algar-Watt and Matt Robotham, with Gav Brown, Chris Coleman, Mike DiDonato, Brian Lynch, Kevin Lynch, Sabrina Snyder, and Amanda Smith. It was written by Ron Algar-Watt, Matt Robotham, Gav Brown, Chris Coleman, Mike DiDonato, Brian Lynch, and Amanda Smith. I'm your announcer, Beetlejuice. 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 Visit SarcasticVoyage.com for show notes, related links, and alternate file formats. Listener feedback can be sent to podcast@algar.com or to the show's voicemail, 206-973-3982. The Sarcastic Voyage podcast is a trademark of Algar Productions. Copyright 2011.
Hello, Sarcastic Voyage. I've been a fan of your little program for a long time, but I'm afraid that as of this most recent episode, my unbroken run has come to an end. I can no longer support a podcast that's as willfully ignorant as yours. As a longtime resident of Arizona, I can only say how insulted I am that you compared my home state to the moon. Arizona is nothing like the moon. For example, the moon has never had the forethought to ban embarrassing and offensive books such as the dictionary. On the moon, you can find the word penis just by looking between penguin and prehensile. Outrageous! While the moon is featureless and bleak, Arizona boasts several trees, many of which are still alive today. And then, oh God, is that a bear? Ah! Oh God!